Welcome to Local Energy Rules, a podcast about people putting together great community renewable energy projects and examining how energy policies help or hurt the development of clean local power. My name is Wade Underwood. This week, John Farrell speaks to Begin Hanrahan, former mayor of Gainesville, Florida, and Ed Regan, former assistant manager for strategic planning at the Gainesville Regional Utilities. Both were instrumental in the creation of Gainesville's Clean Program for Solar Energy in 2009. Here's John, Pagin, and Ed.
Pagin and Ed, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, Wade.
Happy to be here.
Gainesville launched its Feed-in Tariff, or Clean Program, as we often call it in the U.S., in 2009, and as of last year had more than 10 megawatts of solar that were connected, both smaller and medium scale, throughout the city, which made it among the leaders in solar per capita in the world. Pagin, maybe you could tell us a little bit about how Gainesville started looking into the idea of doing more local solar.
Sure, John. And actually, I recently asked for an update to those numbers. We now have over 15 megawatts installed, and GRU just got about 2.5 megawatts of applications in for new systems for this year. So we're continuing to grow and expand that system. But we got into a rather difficult public dialogue and discussion about our future energy supply starting in 2003. And I had actually served on the City Commission prior to that for 6 years and had been termed out. And in that interim period, the utility had started looking at its future energy supply. And in that time frame, really was pretty strongly oriented toward increasing our coal capacity. We are today primarily a coal utility, and at that time there was a strong price preference for coal, of course, and that's something that we did well, and that was what was really recommended from a staff perspective. But there was pretty strong community pushback, and when I was elected mayor in 2004, let's really try to have a strong analysis of all of our options. Ultimately, we came up with a set of policies to focus first and foremost on maximizing energy conservation, to look at what we could do to increase solar here in the quote-unquote sunshine state, and then to increase renewables with the best baseload renewable resources that we have here, which is woody biomass waste. So we had actually first gone forward with a stronger set of net metering policies that we would do retail net metering, and that had actually had some success. But then we were really, as a city commission, saying, gee, what else can we do? And we had some strong citizen proponents in the community who kept saying, gee, you should look at Germany. You should look at what they're doing in Germany. And that's really where Ed and his work as our strategic planning assistant manager and the big thinker at the utility really comes in.
Well, as Pagin said, we were pretty heavily engaged with the public starting in 2003. And there was this one gentleman, he was a German individual, and he kept coming up and saying, you should do what they do in Germany and look at this picture of this fantastic solar array. And he would name these prices. And I would, you know, sit there saying, there's no way that works, you know, from a least cost scenario. But I got really interested in it, and an opportunity came through with the Solar Electric Power Association to get a grant to go on a fact-finding mission to Germany to review their renewable energy policies. And the reason why Germany was doing it, and they probably were the first kickoff of feed-in tariffs in Europe, was they realized they didn't have any friends. They were importing, I think 75 or 80% of their energy in the late 90s, and when Putin started fooling around with the gas supply, they ran into some troubles. And so they realized they had to optimize all of their resources, and so their feed-in tariff, of course, applied to wind, hydro, solar, biomass, every conceivable form of energy. So, it was very interesting, and it was definitely not a policy that was because you wanted to go for least cost, but because you wanted to supply yourself with a diverse source of renewable energy and using local resources. Of course, down here in Gainesville, the local resources that we have available, we're in the middle of Florida, would either be biomass or solar. So some of the commissioners knew that I had gone on this trip, and they came by and talked to me about it and said, you need to do a presentation to the full commission on this. And so I said, sure, and I went there and we went through the whole thing, how it works, what the elements of a feed-in tariff are, how you set the prices and why you do it. And I guess I was kind of surprised when they said, well, why can't we do that here? And that's where I give the general manager a lot of credit. He said, you know, let's explore that. And so we went back and developed a policy. So from that first workshop, which was in October of 2008, we were on the air and going by March of 2009. But of all my years, and I was with Gainesville Utilities over 32 years, of doing rate designs and all kinds of analyses, the solar feed-in tariff is one of the easiest things to do because solar is very predictable, and the rate-making concept is very very clear. And we had really no... the only time I ever did a rate increase where it could, in essence, it was a rate increase to start buying this expensive resource, really nobody was opposed to it. And so it went into place.
What is it about the feed-in tariff that there wasn't opposition to what, you know, was in essence a rate increase? Is it the fact that people could envision themselves going solar under this policy?
I think that was a lot of it. I think that there were a lot of not just citizen investors, but business investors and even institutional investors that kind of heard the pitch and said, I can see myself being engaged in that. And I do think that it was just a time that there was an orientation toward trying new and different things. I think it's actually been much more difficult in more recent years than it was in the 08-09 timeframe because, you know, we had, I think, a little bit more of an optimistic viewpoint.
One of the smart things we did was to what we call manage our exposure. In other words, we set a criteria where we wouldn't buy more than 4 megawatts of solar a year. And I remember sitting there thinking, oh, man, we'll never sell 4 megawatts of solar. We'll never do that amount of solar. Because after a couple of years of the rebates and the net metering, we only had, you know, something less than 300 kilowatts of capacity installed. So given the risk exposure and knowing, you know, what the projections were for gas, the expectation for the feed-in tariff is that it was less than a 1% effective rate increase. So the big shock was that we sold out our 4 megawatts of capacity. I wouldn't say sold out, but we had applications for the 4 megawatts of capacity. What was it, in about 2 weeks, Begin?
Yeah, it went shockingly fast. And, you know, that if there was one point of sort of uncertainty, it was in that first year, where do you set the rate? And the staff had actually come back with a little bit lower rate than we ultimately adopted. And then some of the solar installers came to us and made the case that there wouldn't be adequate uptake at the rate that had been suggested, which was, I think, in the mid-20s per kilowatt hour. And we ultimately adopted the highest rate that was adopted, I think, was
32.
I was going to say it was either 29 or 32. It was 32 for the smallest systems, and then I think it was 29 for the larger systems.
For the ground mount systems.
Yeah, but it was a little bit, you know, it was both art and science. In subsequent years, it's a little bit more science because the as-built costs for those systems that are installed are required to be submitted so that the utility can actually see what the installed costs are and project out what the return on investment is and so on. But that first year, you know, we actually made something of a policy decision to go with a slightly higher rate. With the benefit of 2020 hindsight, we kind of overshot that mark, but it did certainly get the program started with a bang. It certainly brought a lot of worldwide attention.
Have you seen a lot of other, are there other utilities in Florida that looked at that and said, you know, we could do this, you know, we see the advantages, you know, sort of the hedging value of putting some solar in our mix, managing risk, or utilities elsewhere that seem to have learned from the Gainesville example?
I spoke in Fort Collins, as did John Kreider, and they ultimately adopted one, as did Palo Alto. I had some engagement in that, Long Island, and then Los Angeles. And so we've had interaction, and they've all been a little bit different. We've worked with others. People say, oh, we do that. And it's like, no, you do net metering. It's a little bit different. And so there's a lot of lack of understanding of different solar policies even today.
Do you think that the lesson here is that it, you know, for a municipal utility to be successful in coming at it, it really has to come from within? Or do you see there being opportunities for other cities that have municipal utilities kind of coming to this through some outside pressure?
You do have to have some community-based support that translates into political leadership. But it was only after Ed came back from Germany and said, you know, I think we could do this, that we said, yeah, let's do this. I mean, we didn't want to do anything reckless. So I always say you have to have political leadership, you have to have community support, but you do have to have some support from within your utility staff, your technical staff, because it's really pushing a rope if you don't have that. And, you know, I think that's where we really benefited from having Ed and his boss, Bob Hunzinger, and others who were willing to be a little bit on the leading edge and not just sit back and wait and let somebody else do it.
There are other policies now, other clean programs or feed-in tariff programs, where they're looking at this from sort of a value of solar standpoint. It involves sort of a robust calculation, if you will, of the various benefits that solar can bring to the grid system. Do you think that that's a tactic that you might have taken coming to it now, if you were, you know, starting the program now, or do you see some advantage in the German model where you really just focus on the cost of production and getting solar deployed?
There's a problem with public utility regulation throughout the United States for investor-owned utilities, which is why I think you're going to see municipals maybe taking a little bit of a lead. The advantage of the feed-in tariff and where you kind of rub the investor-owned utilities a little bit wrong is that the utility doesn't own it, and so there's no rate of return on it. So for a municipal utility who, you know, we're not rate of return regulated here in America, you know, the one of the advantages of letting the private sector own it is that they can get tax benefits that a municipal organization doesn't get. And now an IOU can get those tax benefits, but they're certainly more interested in owning the asset and getting a rate of return on it. But the thing that the feed-in tariff really captures, and let's just talk about Gainesville for a minute. We had a rebate program. We had the net metering program. Those programs left out most commercial properties. 70% of the commercial properties in Gainesville were occupied by tenants who were leasing the facility. So if you're leasing the facility, you know, you don't get the benefits of you can't really make an investment in a long-term 20-year capital improvement to the property. And if you're not paying the utility bill, if you're the building owner, you don't have the opportunity to, you know, receive the benefits through savings on your utility bill. So the feed-in tariff kind of crosses the hook on that whole institutional problem and allows property owners to make the investment and not worry about who's got the utility account. It also let tax-exempt entities like libraries and schools participate because they leased their roofs to private sector people who could get the tax benefits and make those investments. And so that was, I think, part of the opening of the floodgate is that, more than half of the megawatts that are installed in Gainesville are on commercial properties. Whereas prior to the feed-in tariff, there was only one project that was commercial, and that was the McGurn project.
Do you see other advantages in kind of the structure of the program in allowing for broader participation or, you know, more distribution of the different solar arrays around the community? Was that kind of a conscious piece of the decision to go with the feed-in tariff as opposed to some other method of procuring the solar?
The solar is, again, it costs substantially more than biomass does, but it continues to enjoy much higher popularity. And I think a lot of that is because people have ownership interest in it, and they also physically see it on roofs around town. And I think there's kind of a sense of civic pride associated with that. The feed-in tariff program continues to be just wildly popular. We had polled it among our utility customers. The utility had polled it back around the time we were doing the adoption, and it was up north of 70%. From the perspective of someone who's, you know, had my name on 6 ballots, you definitely like to feel as though your community is behind something, and that's been particularly challenging for Ed and I and others around biomass, which actually from a lot of perspectives, again, it's less expensive. It has more of a carbon reduction impact than the solar does. It produces more jobs in the long run, but, you know, we're pulling knives out of our back on a daily basis over that one, whereas we really don't have that problem with solar. And I think a lot of that is because, you know, solar just enjoys in general a more positive public persona, but also because there's so much community ownership just all over town.
Ed, do you have anything that you want to add on that?
I'll never forget, Gainesville was the first utility in Florida to have a green pricing program, and the intent of the green pricing program was to put solar on some of our facilities. And I had a guy working for me, he says, well, hell, why don't we just get some plywood and, you know, paint it up to look like solar and everybody would be just as happy. you know, they're so quiet. They're so quiet. I don't really understand the love affair of the public with solar, but there really is one. There really is one.
So what's next for Gainesville Regional Utilities? Is the feed-in tariff program going to continue for the foreseeable future?
Well, there's certainly a lot of discussion about the extent to which the prices really have come down to the point that there need not be maybe as rich of a program. I mean, that's been some of the discussion. They did just select new projects this month, and so there will be new projects installed in 2013, but I think moving forward, they may fall back to the net metering program. And I actually, I'll tell you my own bias that I've had the conversation with our solar installer is I actually think that over the long course of time, retail net metering is not, you know, really a bad bet either, you know, because certainly as utility rates do rise, and I think they will across the country because of the need to be more cautious with our energy resources, the need to address carbon, the need to recognize that we are tapping out our fossil fuel resources as time goes on. You know, I kept saying to my own solar installer, you know, I'd love to get into the feed-in tariff program, but if I don't, I'm perfectly happy to do retail net metering. And so, you know, we'll see. But I think that for right now, they're continuing to move forward. But as the whole industry has gotten more robust in this area, I do think, you know, we've kind of gone past some humps, and hopefully there's still going to be a strong market regardless of the continuation of the feed-in tariff program. It was originally designed, by the way, just to go through 2016 with a total of 32 megawatts installed. So hard to say whether it'll make it that far or not.
That was John Farrell, Pagin Hanrahan, and Ed Regan. Pagin and Ed helped to create Gainesville's Clean Program for Solar Energy in 2009. For questions or comments, please email jfarrell@ilsr.org with Local Energy Rules Podcast in the subject. John's Twitter handle is John F. Farrell. This podcast was published on May 2nd, 2013. Thanks for tuning in.